RosicRucianandmasonicorigns 447. 448 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY. A Rosicrucian, and also a member of the Society of Unknown Philosophers as revealed by the cryptograms in his writings. Kircher was in harmony with the program of philosophic reconstruction. Since learning was largely limited to church men, the body of philosophers soon developed an overwhelming preponderance of ecclesiastics in its membership. The original anti-ecclesiastical ideals of the society were speedily reduced to an innocuous state, and the organization gradually became an actual auxiliary of the church. A small portion of the membership, however, maintained an aloofness from the literati of the faith, for it represented an unorthodox class. The alchemists, Rosicrucians, Kabbalists, and magicians. This latter group accordingly retired from the outer body of the society that had come to be known as the Order of the Golden and Rose Cross, and whose adepts were elevated to the dignity of Knights of the Golden Stone. Upon the withdrawal of these initiated adepts, a powerful clerical body remained which possessed considerable of the ancient lore but in many instances lacked the keys by which the symbolism could be interpreted. As this body continued to increase in temporal power, its philosophical power grew correspondingly less. The smaller group of adepts that had withdrawn from the order apparently remained inactive, having retired to what they termed the House of the Holy Spirit, where they were enveloped by certain mists impenetrable to the eyes of the profane. Among these reclusive adepts must be included such well-known Rosicrucians as Robert Flood, Eugenius Philalethes, John Hayden, Michael Mayer, and Henry Kunrath. These adepts in their retirement constituted a loosely organized society, which, though lacking the solidarity of a definite fraternity, occasionally initiated a candidate and met annually at a specified place. It was the Comte de Chazal, an initiate of this order, who raised Dr. Sigismund Backstrom while the latter was on the Isle of Mauritius. In due time the original members of the order passed on, after first entrusting their secrets to carefully chosen successors. In the meantime a group of men in England, under the leadership of such mystics as Ashmole and Flood, had resolved upon repopularizing the ancient learning and reclassifying philosophy in accordance with Bacon's plan for a world encyclopedia. These men had undertaken to reconstruct ancient Platonic and Gnostic mysticism, but were unable to attain their objective for lack of information. Elias Ashmole may have been a member of the European Order of Rosicrucians, and as such evidently knew that in various parts of Europe there were isolated individuals who were in posses Zion of the secret doctrine handed down in unbroken line from the ancient Greeks and Egyptians through Boethius, the early Christian Church, and the Arabians. The efforts of the English group to contact such individuals were evidently successful. Several initiated Rosicrucians were brought from the mainland to England, where they remained for a considerable time designing the symbolism of Freemasonry and incorporating into the rituals of the order the same divine principles and philosophy that had formed the inner doctrine of all great secret societies from the time of the Eleusinia in Greece. In fact, the Eleusinian mysteries themselves continued in the custody of the Arabians, as attested by the presence of Masonic symbols and figures upon early Mohammedan monuments. The adepts who were brought over from the continent to sit in council with the English philosophers were initiates of the Arabian rites, and through them the mysteries were ultimately returned to Christendom. Upon completion of the bylaws of the new fraternity the initiates retired again to Central Europe, leaving a group of disciples to develop the outer organization, which was to function as a sort of screen to conceal the activities of the esoteric order. Such, in brief, is the story which we are able to piece together from the fragmentary bits of evidence available. The whole structure of Freemasonry is founded upon the activities of this secret society of Central European adepts, whom the studious Mason will find to be the definite link between the modern craft and the ancient wisdom. The outer body of Masonic philosophy was merely the veil of this Kabbalistic Rosicrucian and Masonic origins. 449. 450 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY. Order whose members were the custodians of the true arcanum. Does this inner and secret brotherhood of initiates still exist, independent of the Freemasonic order? Evidence points to the fact that it does, for these august adepts are the actual preservers of those secret operative processes of the Greeks, whereby the illumination and completion of the individual is effected. They are the veritable guardians of the lost word, the keepers of the inner mystery, and the Mason who searches for and discovers them is rewarded beyond all mortal estimation. In the preface to a book entitled Long Livers, published in 1772, Eugenius Philalethes, the Rosicrucian initiate, thus addresses his brethren of the most ancient and most honorable fraternity of the Freemasons: remember that you are the salt of the earth, the light of the world, and the fire of the universe. You are living stones, built upon a spiritual house, who believe and rely on the chief lapis angularis, which the refractory and disobedient builders disallowed. You are called from darkness to light. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood. This makes you, my dear brethren, fit companions for the greatest kings, and no wonder, since the King of Kings hath condescended to make you so to himself, compared to whom the mightiest and most haughty princess of the earth are but as worms, and that not so much as we are all sons of the same one eternal Father, by whom all things were made, but inasmuch as we do the will of his and our Father, which is in heaven. You see now your high dignity, you see what you are, act accordingly, and show yourselves what you are, men, and walk worthy the high profession to which you are called. Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. Remember, then, what the great end we all aim at is. Is it not to be happy here and hereafter? For they both depend on each other. The seeds of that eternal peace and tranquility and everlasting repose must be sown in this life, and he that would glorify and enjoy the sovereign good then must learn to do it now, and from contemplating the creature gradually ascend to adore the Creator. Rosicrucianandmasonicorigines. 451. Of all obstacles to surmount in matters of rationality, the most difficult is that of prejudice. Even the casual observer must realize that the true wealth of Freemasonry lies in its mysticism. The average Masonic scholar is fundamentally opposed to a mystical interpretation of his symbols, for he shares the attitude of the modern mind in its general antipathy toward transcendentalism. A most significant fact, however, is that those Masons who have won signal honors for their contributions to the craft have been transcendentalists almost without exception. It is quite incredible that any initiated brother, when presented with a copy of Morals and Dogma upon the conferment of his 14th degree, can read that volume and yet maintain that his order is not identical. WTH the mystery schools of the first ages. Much of the writings of Albert Pike are extracted from the books of the French magician, Eliphas Levi, one of the great Karat transcendentalists of modern times. Levi was an occultist, a metaphysician, a Platonic philosopher, who by the rituals of magic invoked even the spirit of Apollo. News of Tyana, and yet Pike has inserted in his morals and dogma whole pages, and even chapters, practically verbatim. To Pike the following remarkable tribute was paid by Sterling Kerr, Jr., 33 degrees, Deputy Inspector General for the District of Columbia. Upon crowning with laurel the bust of Pike in the House of the Temple, Pike was an oracle greater than that of Delphi. He was truth's minister and priest. His victories were those of peace. Long may his memory live in the hearts of the brethren. Affectionately termed Albertus Magnus by his admirers, Pike wrote of Hermetism and alchemy and hinted at the mysteries of the temple. Through his zeal and unflagging energy, American Freemasonry was raised from comparative obscurity to become the most powerful organization in the land. Though Pike, a transcendental thinker, was the recipient of every honor that the Freemasonic bodies of the world could confer, the modern Mason is loath to admit that transcendentalism has any place in Freemasonry. This is an attitude filled with embarrassment and inconsistency, for whichever way the Mason turns, he is confronted by these 452 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY inescapable issues of philosophy and the mysteries. Yet withal, he dismisses the entire subject as being more or less a survival of primitive superstitions. The Mason who would discover the lost word must remember that in the first ages every neophyte was a man of profound learning and unimpeachable character, who for the sake of wisdom and virtue had faced death unafraid and had triumphed over those limitations of the flesh which bind most mortals to the sphere of mediocrity. In those days the rituals were not put on by degree teams who handled candidates as though they were perishable commodities, but by priests deeply versed in the lore of their cults. Not one Freemason out of 1,000 could have survived the initiations of the pagan rites, for the tests were given in those strenuous days when men were men and death the reward of failure. The neophyte of the Druid Mysteries was set adrift in a small boat to battle the stormy sea, and unless his knowledge of natural law enabled him to quell the storm as did Jesus upon the Sea of Galilee, he returned no more. In the Egyptian rites of Serapis it was required of the neophyte that he cross an unbridged chasm in the temple floor. In other words, if unable by magic to sustain himself in the air without visible support, he fell head long into a volcanic crevice, there to die of heat and suffocation. In one of the Mithraic rites, the candidate seeking admission to the inner sanctuary was required to pass through a closed door by dematerialization. The philosopher who has often ticated the reality of ordeals such as these no longer entertains the popular error that the performance of miracles is confined solely to biblical characters. "Do you still ask," writes Pike, "if it has its secrets and mysteries? It is certain that something in the ancient initiations was regarded as of immense value by such intellects as Herodotus, Plutarch, and Cicero. The magicians of Egypt were able to imitate several of the miracles wrought by Moses, and the science of the Hierophants of the mysteries produced effects that to the initiated seemed mysterious and supernatural." See Legenda for the 28th degree.